KEXP thanks contributing donors and the Real Networks Foundation for supporting Mind Over Matters.
This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. In February, the Seattle City Council announced that a carbon-neutral Seattle was one of its 2010 priorities. What are the key sources of Seattle's carbon emissions? How can we best go about reducing those emissions to the point that the city no longer has a negative impact on climate change? To help answer these questions, we have as our guest Richard Conlon, President of the Seattle City Council and Chair of the Council's Regional Development and Sustainability Committee. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Diane. It's so great to be here.
What led to Seattle's commitment to becoming carbon neutral? Why was this chosen as a city priority in 2010?
Well, we actually select a number of priorities to work on in the course of a year. And this is one that both builds on the work that we've done in the past and also lays out a path for the future. It's a very ambitious idea and audacious, and we wanted to lay something out that would be a real challenge for us to be able to start working on. Now, we didn't set a date. We didn't set a timeline. What we're doing is we're beginning the discussion with the community to say, so what would it actually look like if we imagined a carbon neutral Seattle?
What is your definition of a carbon neutral Seattle?
Well, that would be one that would have a potentially positive net carbon emissions. That is, that we would actually perhaps sequester more carbon than we actually emit. But the bottom line is that we wanted to try and get to a point where we didn't continue to be a source of carbon dioxide pollution or other greenhouse gas pollution.
How has Seattle gone about determining its carbon emissions?
We've done a couple of studies on that. In 2005 and in 2008, we did a review and inventory of what the carbon emissions were. And there's some national and international models that have been followed, and we've looked at what those models are and done our best to come up with a computation of what Seattle actually generates. And part of that was to meet our goal, which we had already set previously, of trying to meet the Kyoto Protocol. The Kyoto Protocol, which was adopted in the 1990s, essentially said that for the United States, our goal was to reduce our carbon emissions by 7% from 1990 levels. So in 2005, we measured what Seattle had already done and accomplished and concluded that we had actually achieved the Kyoto goal. We had reduced our emissions by about 8% from 1990 levels. They crept up a little bit between 2005 and 2008. We're now at about 7% below, just about at the Kyoto Protocol goal. But the fact is that during that time period, we've had a tremendous increase in economic output, as well as about a 15% increase in population. So the fact that we've been able to reduce our carbon emissions while still having a fairly, in 2008, healthy economy, and while actually increasing the population within the city, is a really good sign about our ability to make some significant progress.
Where do Seattle's carbon emissions come from? What's the breakdown?
It's very interesting. Seattle is very different from many other places. And there are two kinds of breakdowns you have to do. One is a direct emission breakdown, and the other is the what we call embedded carbon. So first of all, the difference between Seattle and most other places in the United States is that because our electricity is entirely carbon neutral, that is, Seattle City Light has achieved carbon neutrality, and we achieved that about 6 years ago. Because of that, we do not have the electric generation emissions, which are actually the largest source for many other cities around the country. The result of that is that transportation emissions become the dominant emission in Seattle if you look at our direct emissions. Now, most people, when I say transportation emissions, they immediately jump to cars, which, and I want to emphasize, cars are very important and are very significant. But it turns out that of our direct emissions, automobiles are only about 20%, which totally flabbergasted me when I actually started looking into the data. I expected it to be much larger than that. They are about equal to the emissions share of Seattle's flights out of SeaTac, which is also a rather startling number to think about, that in fact our emissions from air travel are about equal to our emissions from automobiles. So you add those, that's about 20% automobiles, 20% air emissions, 20% freight and other transportation. And then the other 40% consists of all of the other things that we do, from our industrial production to the carbon emitted by our buildings that are heated by gas and oil and so forth. Okay, so that's the direct emissions. Then if you really want to calculate what the emissions are, you also have to look at what we call embedded carbon, which is the carbon that's in the products. And this is where we have an even more interesting challenge than the one of dealing with direct emissions, because the carbon that's embedded in the products, such as, for example, say you buy a toy from China. Where does that carbon count? Does it count for China or does it count for Seattle? Well, In our previous studies, we've generally counted embedded carbon for the place where it's generated, but that's really not the best way in the future. It's very difficult to measure embedded carbon, but in the future, we're going to have to find a way to account for embedded carbon. The reason being that reducing your carbon emissions by offloading the production of things to some other place where they produce the carbon is not a carbon positive thing to do. So we have to figure out a way in which to capture those embedded emissions as well.
Then by the same token, if we emit carbon for products that are sold elsewhere, would those not count toward our emissions?
That becomes a very interesting calculation, yes. And that would be something that we will need to figure out as we figure out the balance there. Then the interesting question is, if we can then take the production that we are doing for export and actually reduce the carbon emissions, we have a commodity that we can sell. Because at some point in the near future, reduced carbon emissions is going to become a commodity on a carbon trading market. And carbon credits are going to be something that Seattle, by generating products more efficiently, for example, would be able to actually sell and generate revenue on.
Looking at the source of Seattle's emissions, would you elaborate on the implications in terms of cutting our greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, the implication that we always need to keep in mind is that we have to think about carbon emissions as a network in a system. You can do all kinds of different things to reduce carbon emissions. And let's take the automobile as an example, because that's one of the things that people often focus on. It is the most visible issue that we need to deal with. So if you're going to reduce emissions from automobiles, one thing you can do is make the automobile more efficient. If you use 20% less fuel per mile, then you've actually reduced your emissions by a significant amount. That's a really good thing. Another thing you can do is reduce the use of the automobile. So if you're able to substitute trips with, say, walking or bicycling or using transit, or even not taking the trip at all, maybe doing the business electronically, that's another way in which you can reduce the emissions from the automobile. Thirdly, you could actually do a complete conversion to a non-carbon emission system. And that's been something that's been envisioned for the automobile, as if we convert to electric cars, and the electric cars in turn are using electricity that is produced at a zero carbon, such as Seattle produces, then you actually achieve still another great leap in reducing the emissions. Overarching that is the question of the system. And so designing the system in order to make it easy for people to reduce those emissions is really, in the long run, what we're going to have to do. So if you hone in on the automobile as what you're trying to do, you want to do all of those strategies. All of them are very important. But to my mind, the most critical strategy for reducing the automobile emissions from carbon is by creating a great urban environment. Because if you create an urban environment in which people can walk, take transit, bicycle to the places where they want to go, where they want to work, where they want to recreate, where they live, where they want to shop. If you're able to do that, then you really have struck at the source of what your carbon emissions are. So developing urban environments that really work for people, that are pleasant, that they're happy to be in, and that they don't feel like they have to travel all the time to get away from, is really, to my mind, the key way in which to address some of those kinds of emissions.
Do you have any thoughts about our flights out of SeaTac?
That's a really difficult one to challenge, and it's going to be something that is going to require all of those strategies, and yet we have a much less clear idea of how to do that, at least from the literature that I've looked at, for air travel than we do for automobile travel. It was kind of interesting. I was mentioning this to a person I know who is very involved in sustainability and dealing with carbon issues, and his first reaction was, "But wait, I have to fly for my job. What am I going to do?" You know, and that's kind of the reaction that some people have when we talk about cars. So the long-range goal, I think, is not to say to people, you're not going to be able to do that. The long-range goal is to be able to find out a way in which you can do it more efficiently, less often, in a way that really works for you, but that, in fact, is going to reduce the carbon emissions. For air travel, one of the things that's been suggested, there's a study that's for a carbon-neutral Britain that has been put together. And one of the things they concluded was that domestic air travel essentially should be ended in Britain. That Britain is small enough that you could actually do all of your domestic travel by train or other means, and that they should simply end domestic air travel in Britain, but keep it for internationally, because that's something where it is, in fact, useful and necessary. We in Seattle, one of the things that I would hope we would consider is developing high-speed rail corridor from Vancouver to Portland, where about a significant percentage of the flights coming out of SeaTac go to Vancouver and Portland. If we can get a high-speed rail corridor, which we now have some initial funding from the Obama administration to begin development of that, if we can get that high-speed rail corridor developed, we can be much more efficient in those shorter trips, and that would be a very significant dent in our air emissions.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Richard Conan, president of the Seattle City Council. Our topic is how to go about making Seattle a carbon-neutral city. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. You alluded to this a bit earlier, but could you review the work that's been done by Seattle up to now to try to address climate change and evaluate where we are at this point compared to where we need to go?
Sure. Well, we've done a lot of things that have been pretty significant in terms of addressing climate change. I mean, back in the year 2000-2001, the city first began working on climate change issues. And what we realized was that the U.S. government at that point was not going to ratify the Kyoto Protocol. So the United States was not going to participate in the international arrangements at that time. And so we thought, well, you know, all we can do as a local government is to try and implement that for ourselves, try and show the way, be a model, and hopefully the rest of the country will come along. So we began our work on that. And the easy place, or I shouldn't say the easy place, but the place where it was most logical for us to start was electricity, because electricity is a primary source of carbon emissions in most places. Seattle City Light was actually a relatively easy place to start because most of our energy does come from hydro. And all of our hydro, we've worked very hard to make salmon friendly, but it is also does not produce any significant amount of emissions. So we looked at what were the things that we could do to make Seattle City Light climate neutral. Leadership at that time of Councilmember Heidi Wills was particularly significant in making this happen. So we laid out a plan, and we were able to, first of all, offload the one piece of coal-fired power plant that we had. We then found the other things that were our carbon emissions, mostly the energy that we bought on the spot market, and we were able to find offsets for all of that energy. So we basically became carbon neutral fairly quickly. So City Light was the relatively quick and easy one to tackle. Then we started working on buildings, and buildings are a huge source of carbon emissions. We have standards for reducing the energy consumption of buildings. We're working with historic preservation folks to make sure that old buildings are actually renovated and updated instead of torn down, which is something that, you know, creates more carbon problems. And the built environment is actually a place where we've developed a significant architectural and engineering expertise, and we think that's something we can export around the world as people look at reducing carbon emissions. And of course, we're tackling transportation. We've dramatically increased our bicycle and pedestrian facilities. We're working very hard to get more transit in place. And those are the core strategies that we're actually working on.
What is the overall plan for moving forward from this point and actually making Seattle carbon neutral? What are the steps we're going to take?
Well, let me first of all say one thing about the whole concept of carbon neutral. You know, it's not a very mediagenic word, carbon neutral. It's not something that if you go out and talk to people in the street who are not really into these issues, that they'll jump on and say, oh, that's wonderful. I want to be carbon neutral. So one of the things we're trying to do is to find a way in which to create a vision of a society that is climate friendly, or some other term like that, that we're going to try and come up with that will actually help people capture the concept that you're actually doing something positive for the climate. And the words are part of it, but also the image, the idea, a model of what it might look like if we're able to actually reduce our carbon emissions to zero. So that's one of the things we're working on. A second thing we're working on is putting together strategies around different sectors of the carbon-emitting areas of our society. So part of that is transportation and so forth, the ones that we've identified. Part of it is also looking at the, I'm not sure quite how to put it, but the more complex ways in which you might identify the way in which systems work. Example of that, food. Food, which is something that we've been working on, I've been working on in my office for several years to try and increase local food production, has very many areas of it, food production, distribution, consumption, that actually contribute to carbon emissions. So if you start thinking of it from a systems perspective, how do you change the food system so that it reduces carbon emissions? That gets at a whole lot of different things. The carbon emissions from transporting the food, the carbon emissions from producing the food, from the fertilizer and things of that nature, carbon emissions from the waste that's generated, the food waste, which now goes into composting for the city of Seattle. So thinking of it as a system gives you another way in which to start approaching the issue of reducing carbon. So our goal is to put together a lot of these ideas this year, start laying out some short-term strategies for things that we can do in the immediate term, most of which are going to be relatively easy to figure out, things like, for example, finding ways in which to get more people bicycling and walking in the city, and then lay out a long-term strategy that says, year by year, this is what we're going to start working to accomplish, this is how we're going to measure our results, and this is the reporting mechanism that we're going to have in order to report back to the people. And we don't know if we're going to be able to pick a date. You know, people have said a really audacious goal would be to be carbon neutral by 2030. That would be amazing if we're able to do that. But we don't know that we can do that. And we're kind of reluctant to promise too much until we know more. So what we're doing is in the beginning, we're on the first steps of a very long journey. And that journey is going to require all of us to really be engaged. And it's not going to work unless the people of Seattle really have the opportunity to participate, choose to participate, and really dig in and actually figure out ways in which to make this happen.
To what extent do you see offsets being counted toward making Seattle carbon neutral?
Well, offsets, that's an interesting question as to how we deal with that. The best way to reduce carbon is to actually reduce the carbon. But there are some things that you're going to do that will generate carbon, and some things are going to be very difficult to reduce. So you've got two things that you can do in which to compensate for that if you're not actually able to reduce the carbon. One of them is offsets. And offsets essentially is buying somebody else's carbon reduction and using that as a credit for yourself. So for example, if you invest in solar energy plants to replace coal plants, you can get credit from the carbon perspective for those offsets. So it's something to do when you actually can't reduce the carbon. It's a great thing from the world perspective, but it's not quite the same thing as actually reducing the carbon yourself. Now, the other thing that is beginning to emerge in the discussion of climate neutrality is the question of sequestering carbon. Are there things you can actually do that will not really be an offset, but will actually take carbon out of the atmosphere and put it into the ground? And some of that stuff you could actually do yourself, I mean, as a city or as a corporate entity, rather than buying an offset from somebody else. And that might actually be a really positive way as an alternative to offsets to actually be able to compensate for some of the carbon that you're generating.
Do you know of any other cities that have made this type of commitment within the U.S.?
I don't know of any other cities in the U.S. that have quite gone to the level that we're hoping to be able to go to. But there's a lot of people talking about it and working on it. I presented this at a National League of Cities conference in Washington, D.C. this spring to a group of cities that were interested in energy and environmental issues. And there was a lot of interest there in several cities who said, yes, we're working on a similar kind of concept. I don't think anybody has a detailed plan at this point as to exactly how they're going to get there. One of the cities that I was really interested in developing connections with was the city of Pittsburgh, which is one that is right now very actively beginning to start the same kind of discussion. They see their future as being very different from the sort of traditional image of Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh has been changing really fast over the last several decades as well. It's no longer the kind of industrial city that it might have been 50 years ago. And so they're now looking at carbon neutrality as a way in which they might be able to capture a new way in which their city could be imagined around the world, and also as something that, of course, they think is a really positive thing to do. So that's an example. There's several cities in California that have been working on the issue. A number of cities are really tackling the whole concept of how do we actually respond positively to climate. And former Mayor Greg Nickels led an effort in the National U.S. Conference of Mayors, and more than 1,000 cities signed up to actually try and meet the goals of the Kyoto Protocol. So those cities are a tremendous base for being able to deal with becoming more climate friendly. And the fact is that while it's great to be the leader, it's wonderful to be out front, and we have this great opportunity to be innovative and think of things to do, we want everybody to do it. It's not just that we want Seattle to be out there doing it all by ourselves. That would really not accomplish very much. What we really want to do is to be able to build this network that everybody is going to participate in.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Richard Conan, president of the Seattle City Council. Our topic is how to make Seattle a carbon-neutral city. How will the goal of making Seattle carbon-neutral be incorporated into city decisions? What will be the mechanism of accountability?
Good question. We've been talking about several ways in which we might be able to do that. One idea that we came up with was the idea of doing a climate note on legislation. So right now, if we have a piece of legislation that comes to the city council, we do what's called a fiscal note, which essentially says this is what the implications of this are for the city's expenditures and revenues. One thing we might do is add to that a climate note. Does this particular piece of legislation have an impact on our carbon emissions, positively or negatively? We've been kind of toying with that and thinking about whether it actually will be a useful mechanism. Most of our legislation doesn't have much impact one way or the other, so we're not sure how good that's going to be. And then we're starting to back up that and say, well, actually, by the time something gets to the city council as legislation, it may be too late to make those choices. So what we really would like to do is to embed it into the decision-making process within the administrative part of the city and have them consider that decision when they're actually deciding whether or not to move forward with a particular way of addressing a problem. So we're looking at how we might be able to do that. Then we also want to make sure that in the larger sense, we do have a reporting mechanism. We've got this inventory we do every 3 or 4 years. It's going to be updated next year, and some of the ways in which we measure carbon are going to be updated as we continue to try and become more sophisticated and more real in the way in which we do that, and actually be able to count what we've done and then be able to report that back to the people of Seattle.
To what extent will you be reviewing current programs that are already in place?
Well, I think we'll do that somewhat. The fact is that once something is set in motion, it's hard to turn it around. So things that are currently being done are perhaps less of a target than new programs or new projects that we might be getting into. But all of the things we do have the potential for having some change that's going to be positive. Whether that's a change simply in making the use of energy more efficient, or whether it's a change in the design of a building or something of that nature, there are ways in which you can change it even while you're in the middle of the project.
What do you see as the key barriers to making Seattle carbon neutral?
Well, I think the key barriers from my perspective are the fact that this is such a big idea that it's hard for people to actually get their arms around it and say, well, this is something we should look at. There's a real risk of people looking at it and saying that's just such pie in the sky instead of carbon in the sky that it's kind of pointless in some ways. And that's how the reaction that we get. And the reaction that we got to some of the work that we've done previously on climate issues, the situation is so big that we can't really do anything about it. Well, like most things, it's going to be a long journey, but if you never start, you're never going to get there. So we think by laying out this goal, we do have the ability potentially to actually inspire people rather than drive them to say it's just too big to do anything with. Still, that's a big barrier. A second one is really being methodical about doing the analysis and recognizing that if you're going to really turn around a huge enterprise like an industrial system that essentially is built on carbon, you have to do it in a way that is going to be possible without major disruption. And that's a critical challenge that we have to face. Some things are pretty easy to do, and you actually can do them by changing the way in which people think about carbon. But other things are going to require some fairly significant transformations, and you have to be able to do those transformations while recognizing that most people still have to make a living, get to work, raise their families, and that those things require them to do things in our current system that may generate carbon. So you can't just tell them, okay, you've got to stop all this stuff and do everything differently. It just doesn't work. So building that partnership with people is going to be the huge challenge, and then reassuring people that we actually are going to make this movement in a methodical way that's going to take into account people's real needs.
Where and in what ways do you plan to focus your efforts as council president toward the goal of making Seattle carbon neutral?
Well, my first goal is to really get the idea out there that there is an image of a carbon neutral Seattle that is positive, that is a good society. It's a society we want to live in. So helping people to create that vision, I think, is the first thing that I want to do. And then we'll be working with all of my colleagues to see how in each one of the areas that we specialize in, the committees we chair, the legislation we're most interested in, that can feed into the overall goal. And then finally, we want to develop a set of work plans, and we hope to come out by the end of this year with a timeline and strategy for how we're actually going to accomplish this. And I should say, recognizing that it is a very patient process. You know, people should not expect things to happen overnight. We know it's not going to be accomplished in 5 years or 10 years or maybe not even in 20. But to help people understand that this journey is an important one to start.
What will a carbon neutral Seattle look like? Would you describe that Seattle?
If I could really describe it, then I think we'd have the vision that we're looking for. But I can tell you some of the things that it almost certainly would have. One thing it would have is much more compact communities, communities where people live generally closer together with great access to connect those communities with transit, with bicycle paths, with pedestrian walkways, and communities that would have the amenities that people really want to have in order to be able to live there, things like parks and libraries and community facilities. So it would look like really a very nice place to live, but a nice place to live that would probably be closer together than most of the things that we have right now and would have better connections than we have right now. That much we know, and that much I think we can imagine. It would have buildings that would generate a lot of their own energy and would generate a lot of the things that they actually use in the buildings. It would have a fair amount of things like solar panels and windmills scattered around in places where that's appropriate. It would have a lot of local food being grown by people on their buildings and in their buildings and around their buildings. All of those kind of things are things that we are pretty confident are going to be able to be part of a carbon neutral Seattle or a climate friendly Seattle. It would also be a place where it would have to be a place where people can really do well in terms of making a living and where we actually produce the products that we consume as much as possible here in Seattle. It would be a place where we have industry that really works and the industry that is adapted to do things in an environmentally friendly way. One of the projects that I'm working on right now is a project called an eco-industrial district, where we would actually develop an area of the industrially zoned land in Seattle in a way that would actually encourage not only green business, but that every business in it would have an environmentally responsible plan whereby all of their emissions would be dealt with, accounted for, and mitigated. And this is one of the type of innovative ideas that we're going to have if we are actually going to have the kind of Seattle we want.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think the message I'd like to leave the listeners with is that this is a big, audacious goal. It's a goal that's essential if we're going to survive in the next century. We know what the impacts of climate change are going to be. We know that action at the international and national level is difficult and challenging. We know that Seattle can actually do really well, that we have a tremendous amount of resources that could potentially get us where we want to go, and that this could be a tremendous boost for our economy, because Seattle, as the place that produces climate-friendly technology and climate-friendly products and climate-friendly ideas, is a really potentially great thing for us for our economic future. So we can do this together. It's going to be a great opportunity and a great journey. There'll be a little bit of pain along the way, but if we work really hard, we'll be able to make sure that that doesn't affect people in a negative way and that actually we can create a really positive society.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Diane.
You have just been listening to Richard Conlon, president of the Seattle City Council, speak about how to make Seattle a carbon-neutral city. For more information, check on the web at www.yesmagazine.org/blogs/Richard-Conlon. Again, that's yesmagazine.org/blogs/Richard-Conlon. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.